This week on RSVB Update, we unpack the layers of You Are It. What it is isn't what it appears to be. Also, patch notes, another look at safecracking, and Google's talking AI assistant gets smarter. This is RSVB Update, episode 670, recorded Wednesday, May 9th, 2018. The layers of You Are It. Hello, everybody, and thank you for joining us for another episode of RSB and the Update. Quest Week once again here. It just feels like we did this not too long ago, Tannis, eh?
Yeah. So I guess tag, Shane.
Yeah, you are it. Anyways, joining us here to discuss Quest Week this week is Alex43, who is a longtime RSBNB informer writer and member of Clan Quest, too. So welcome aboard, Alex.
Hey, thanks for having me back on board. I totally thought I scarred you last time.
No, though. I don't even remember what you were last on for. That's probably pretty bad.
Okay, memory suppressed. Not mentioning noted. I have to try my tactics differently this time.
All right, so this week's Quest Week is something of a little bit of a different beast than normal here, because what ends up happening with this quest is that it was released totally differently than other quests were in the past, so much so that we just got this news posting here. It just says, "You are it. Today brings the release of our newest intermediate bottle quest, only requiring membership to take part. This quest will take you on a journey of you're it, you're it, you're it, you're it, you're it, you're it, and so on and so forth down the road. And so have fun and playing through Maud Osborne and Team Eclipse's Love Child. But remember, you are it." So, you know, we normally do quest weeks here, and we go through the core aspects of the quests and talk about what happens in the quest. So I'm going to just go out on the limb here, and I'm going to say that you should probably consider this entire episode of RSBNB Update until we move on to the patch notes a spoiler zone, because this quest is probably one that, if you haven't done it yet, you probably are not wanting to have spoiled to you. But in the event that you do want to hear our thoughts on it, please continue listening. And I would encourage everyone to listen, because, I mean, if everyone didn't want to listen, there would be no point in the podcast. So, now,
and trust us, this is one quest you do not want spoiled, because, well, that good.
Yeah, there's one part you might want spoiled.
Right?
Yeah. Where the hell to start the damn thing?
Okay. So, this is literally all the information that we got. You go to the game and you say you want to start, you are it. Well, that's all the information you're given. You're not given any location of where it might be. You're not given any location.
It says you are in every single lot. The items required are you are it. The quest rewards are you are it. Everything is you are it.
Now,
this quest is pretty serious.
Now, when it was split on Twitter and social media, Maud Osborne said that about 50% of the people actually liked this method. Another 50% felt that it shouldn't have gone this way, and they should have released more information about the quest. Now, I'm going to ask you guys, what do you guys think? Should there have been more info released about this?
No way, Jose.
I don't really like this style myself personally.
Okay.
It's just not my thing. Nothing against the quest. It's a great quest, but not my cup of tea.
Right. And for everything going forward in this quest, as I mentioned, spoilers ahead. So there's actually a little bit of a loophole, and they're going to be adding in the actual start mechanics and who to talk to and what to do for this quest in the next game update when that arrives on Monday. They're actually going to add it to the quest journal where to go. Now,
that's good.
For those of you guys who don't look online, the world map can be a good tool to use. And, you know, I was actually surprised at the utility of it, because it only shows quests that you have not completed. But for some reason, it also showed Evil Dave's Big Day Out on the world map as well. I think that's what it was. So you see this new quest icon, and if you hover over it, it says you are it. And that's actually one of the easier ways to figure out where this quest was starting, is to just look at the world map. Now, personally, I'm going to say that this might have gone a little bit too far, and I would have preferred it if that wasn't even there. I don't know. I think that might be going pretty far for you, Tatis, right?
Well, yeah, man, because even though I knew where to go, it still took me like 10 minutes to find the right spot.
Was that before or after I showed you the tree?
No, it was after. Like, I'm looking at the picture, and I still can't get the right tree. I'm clear-cutting a forest around me, and I'm still... luckily, someone else is doing it, and they're like, this one right here. I was like, oh, thank goodness. But yeah, no, Shane showed me, and I still couldn't find the exact tree. Yeah.
And for those of you guys wondering, the start point is in McGrubber's Wood. Now, I would just like to do a little bit of a mental exercise here right now with you, Alex. If it said you are it, and that's all, how would you get from you are it to McGrubber's Wood without the world map?
Well, first off, I would look at the news post itself because that's where the most of the information comes from, and I would try to discern that. At one point, I actually opened up the browser inspect window, and I started going behind
too.
The HTML stuff, seeing if they had a hidden message there or something.
Boy, isn't that funny, Tad? It's what we do,
eh? They have done that before, and they probably are not afraid to do it again. So that was my first interpretation of it, but I didn't find anything. It was just simply you are it over and over again. There's nothing to it. So
yeah.
I decided it was in RuneScape somewhere, and I check the quest journal because that's usually what players start off
there.
With. Checking the quest journal, seeing where the quest starts, maybe what kind of rewards or items you need. And I tried that, and it also said you are it. And so I'm thinking, okay, this quest is challenging me now. Finding where it starts is basically the first challenge itself. And so I started tearing it apart. I checked that pretty well, the whole UI. I thought, if you are it, maybe the quest is saying that you are the quest, and the quest is actually hidden on you as a character somehow. So I was checking my bank. I was interacting with bankers and stuff, trying to see if it maybe I had a weird item in the bank or something. And I was checking all the tabs and stuff like that. I went through the UI. I checked all the skills and whatnot. Just kept on going back and forth on that. It took me a while. And I like that, actually. That was my favorite part of the quest, is figuring out how to start, because when it gives you that simple, that super, super subtle hit, it drives you to just keep on trying different things over and over and over again. And sometimes you come up with these weird, unique ideas.
And there's 85 references of you are it on that post. They copy and pasted that 85 times. I don't know if that has something to do with it.
Number 85? Maybe it could have been a coordinate or something, a sextant coordinate.
Yeah, but that doesn't give you a east, west, north. You'd need four numbers for that. So I don't know. I knew upon, you know, seeing the scroll, because if you look at the scroll here, and, you know, I'm trying to take you guys through the methodology of solving this quest without, you know, just spelling it out, because if you look at the image that you see on the post here, there's a scroll, and there's a hand with blood on it. So, and that scroll is probably, I mean, it's connected. And when you see Yuri T and a scroll, Yuri treasure trails, right? So there is actually a crate clue in McGrubber Wood, believe it or not. And I was unsure if that might have something to do with it. But then once again, how do you get from A to that clue scroll? I don't know. But I think we could have – I'm not complaining about this. I actually like this method of introduction. I'm just trying to think of myself. If I didn't look on the world map, how would I have found it? So
YouTube.
Yeah, that maybe. Maybe.
I'm not saying. I'm just saying, you know.
Yeah.
I don't endorse it. I'm
like the Weekly
saying.
Bite. I mean, I did some investigative looking beforehand, and you know, that was a spoiler for me, unfortunately, is that I had to go look and see at the world map of where this quest was before I wanted to start it. And you know, thankfully, I saw that there was that new icon on the map, and that's all there was to it. But beyond that, if you don't look at the world map, I don't know how you're going to find this.
Well, even with that icon, how did you figure out the tree? Like,
There was a bit of collusion on that one for me.
Oh?
Yep, some of the fine folks on Clan Quest were mentioning stuff.
Yeah, there were people in the southern part of it, so I just started chopping trees in the southern part of the forest.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
All right.
No. So that's how you start the quest. And, you know, I think aside from the location of it and, you know, figuring out the location, that's all I'm going to complain about with this quest. The rest of it is perfect going forward. Now.
Again, totally my favorite part of it, though.
Yeah. And you know, it's the first thing I thought of when I woke up today is, okay, we had the quest. It was great. But how would I have found this if I didn't look on the map? And that's the burning question still for me. So, all right. So did you guys enjoy the general theme of it, in that it almost seemed as though you were on a ticking clock throughout the quest?
Actually, I didn't feel like I was.
Yeah, I never... And I never really felt in danger either. And so let me just start by saying, like, I kind of have to separate myself and kind of evaluate the quest on its own merits, because I don't do clue scrolls. It is not my thing. I don't like them. I don't do them. But as for, like, the writing and the theme and the feel of the quest, it was really good. Like, the writing was excellent. Mm-hmm. I really, really enjoyed that, but I never did feel in danger.
All right. So when you first find the clue scroll, you find the double agent, which, of course, you find in the hard clue scrolls when you do an emote clue. He will be the one who, you know, has those weird sayings, like, in the end, only the three-legged will survive, and so on and so forth. And
actually, that's Yuri who does that. The double agent's the guy who attacks you.
Oh, okay. I didn't realize the difference between them. I thought they were the same when we were doing the clue.
No, he says beware of double agents, and that's a double agent, and then you kill him, and then Uri appears, and he's the exact same guy, and he tells you the weird thing.
Yeah. All right.
That's how we know the name Yuri.
So you read the scroll, you accept the quest, and, you know, when you after you accept the quest, you're given another mysterious clue scroll. And it has Yurit once again plastered all over it. Now, I found this part of the clue puzzle easy. How about you guys?
Oh yeah, that was actually really easy.
All right. So the way this one worked is you went line by line, and you know, each line, actually not each line, the second line doesn't have one, but in the first line and the third line, you have an extra R, and on the third line, you have an extra E, and on the, let's see here, which was it? And on the fourth line, you have an L, and on the fifth line, you have a D, and then on the sixth line, you have an O. And what does that spell?
Geraldo.
Yay. So basically, you guys know those Facebook posts where they show you a whole bunch of number threes and they say, if you can find the eight, you're the smartest person in the world.
Right.
It's basically one of those.
Yeah, basically spot the difference. First line R, second line E, third line L, fifth line D, and then the last line, there's an extra O in there, and that spells Reldo, and you go talk to Reldo in Varrock.
Yep.
Now, and Tanis, I'm wondering, do you think this is because of you don't like clue scrolls, or do you think it's an accessibility issue with the quest?
Well, I mean, this was a challenging quest because of accessibility factors on top of that. And I actually had to work with some of my clan members that were going through it at the same time, and we're kind of brainstorming because I didn't see that at all. Like, that kind of stuff blends in for me. So, yeah, that was lucky. Luckily, one of the parts that we were colluding to get through.
All right. That's fair. So you make your way to Reldo in Varrock, and I mean, he's just in his usual spot. He's not hiding. And, you know, this was, you know, a very simple thing to do. You just run into the back of the Varrock castle. He's in his library. You talk to him and he says, "Oh no, why did it have to be you? You're dead, or you're as good as dead." And he says, "What are you talking about? The clue scroll in your back. I've seen it 1,000 times. Each time an adventurer brings me one, they're next to be dead. So they either complete the clue scroll and then they go missing, or they ignore the clue scroll and die. So this is your chance to be different with this clue scroll." And Reldo effectively tells you that this is going to be a quest where you have the potential to die at the end of it. And he hands you the next part of the clue. And when he does that, it adapts itself and it moves on. And this is actually a relatively simple part of the clue that's next. It says, "Cry next to Duke Horatio. Panic before you talk to me. Equip nothing. Nothing at all." And of course, Duke Horatio is up in the Lumbridge Castle. So you just go there and you talk to him. And then that's part of the clue.
You don't even talk to him. You just do the emotes.
Yeah. This was the only part that I contributed because I could figure it out.
I know where the panic button is.
Yes.
Also of note, if you went into Lumbridge, you got a chance to see that beautiful new door that they added last week.
Yeah. Hey. Enter in the back.
I still don't know why that was needed, but hey, it's there. And we had words about that in the friends chat when I was doing it. And those of you guys watching the video version will see my unpleasant reaction to the door.
Didn't figure out the door?
Well, no, it's that one they added in. So anyways, you make your way up to Duke Horatio, do what you're supposed to do, perform the two emotes. And, you know, when you do that, a cutscene begins. And I found this part really interesting because spark of energy is released from you. And then, bam, you're in this alternate dimension, I guess you could say, or maybe this alternate future, and you're surrounded by double agent Ripper demons. And
oh, okay, I didn't know what those things were.
Yeah, it said Ripper demon if you examine them.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And he says, "I ask that you ignore them. Don't waste your few hours on a clue scroll." So the Ripper demons are basically saying, "Enjoy the time you have remaining. You are it." And then you're in this effectively a dream, and then all the Ripper demons attack you. Because I think we've all been killed by a Ripper demon at one point or another.
Oh, yeah.
And then we go to what looks like another glimpse, and here we see Yuri, who is talking to Horatio, who we find out that Yuri was the Undertaker and was dealing with Horatio's wife. And Horatio wants everything that his wife had buried with her. So he hands off this casket of goods to be buried, and Yuri takes it along. And that leads us to our next clue, when the clue scroll changes after that cutscene. And here you have a traditional coordinate style clue. Now, you might be wondering, okay, how do you find this coordinate style clue? Well, what you can do with that is we actually have a tool for that on rsbnb.com. So if you go to rsbnb.com and you are looking for your clue scroll items, you just click the interactive map on the side, and then we have the treasure trail mapper. And that's at 0058 North by 2501 East. And you'll see that that puts you directly into the very southern tip of the cemetery in Lumbridge. And that is where you have to go next with this quest. And
it's really not that far to go.
No, it's just basically run out of Lumbridge and away you go. There's not too much to write home about with this. It's basically a traditional coordinate style clue. You go there and you dig, and another cutscene begins, and you see what was actually happening when Yuri buried that. So, I assume we didn't have any trouble finding the coordinate, right?
Nope.
No.
Okay.
That's so where
at this
we find
point,
out.
What you'll notice is that the clue scrolls have been progressing in difficulty. Like, speak to Reldo, that's a level 1 clue scroll, and then level 2 is bring out those emotes and stuff, and you have those two part emotes at least, and then level 3 is the.
Yeah, I never thought about that.
It gets a little more interesting as we progress forward, believe me. Mm-hmm. So.
Okay. Now, this is where we find out he's like really sleazy.
Yeah, so he were there in this glimpse, and he's there, and he basically says, "Hello, Duchess," and he gets down and he starts going through the casket that he was supposed to bury. What treasures do you hide? So basically, we find out that Yuri, when he was an undertaker, was stealing from the people who he was supposed to be burying their possessions with. And he found obsidian jewelry and said, yes, that'll do. That'll do very well. So we found that part out about Yuri. And then you talk to him. The player talks to him in a cutscene. And, you know, if you're in a hole, grave robbing is fine. Yuri was in debt and he had to add grave robbing to his resume. And he said they go, quote, hand in muddy hand. So... And then he does the same old thing where he's telling you, you know, stop following this clue scroll. You're going to end up dead. And he says, you are it at the end of it. So this is, you know, casually progressing along as we go. And it feels as though the stakes are being amped up a bit. And here we're given the casket at the end because we dug the casket up. And this is going to have our end reward in it. But of course, we cannot open that casket yet because we haven't reached the end of the clue scroll. Now.
Yeah, and it needs a key. I mean, you can't just use a spear and break a lock open. You actually have to use a key on this thing.
Definitely. Now, this next mysterious clue scroll map. Okay. So, Rimington, obviously, yep. I think. Yes?
Mm-hmm. Yep, totally Rimington.
Okay, that was the easy part.
Yep.
Now, how long did it take you guys to find out that you had to click the damn POH portal?
That actually took me a while. I thought it was the Elder Tree for a second there, and because we already had the theme of chopping trees at the start of the quest, I was chopping that thing like you wouldn't believe.
Okay.
So this is kind of funny, but it was a complete accident. I clicked on the portal as I was running through.
Okay.
Remington.
Same thing happened to me as well.
So, yeah.
I mean, it's dead center in the middle of the map. How do you miss that, really?
Yeah, same thing happened to me as well. I went through a couple of the houses and I basically examined everything in game and basically clicked on all the bookcases, all the chests, everything, all the walls. I ran my mouse over everything to see if there were any new mouse over options, but nothing. Then, you know, me being me, I'm, you know, just looking and here and I think, oh, what's this? I haven't been here for a while. I should have really... have come through here not too long ago with this. And, well, what else exists in Rimington, you guys?
Not much. A couple trees. There's the mining place, and then there's Melzer's Maze. And
oh, the customs office.
Oh, that's it.
No. Yeah. I was in a house, and then I decided, there's my whiteberry patch. I'm going to click on my whiteberry patch. But then... I don't know what I did. I just was mousing over at the house portal and I just clicked on it as I was going to my whiteberry patch. And lo and behold, there we were, the next part of the quest.
Which had a wicked cutscene.
Yeah, basically you're inside a tiled POH room. And this woman is here saying, I know it's late. I heard you were the person to come to. I need to bury someone. That's why most people come here, Yuri says. But I need to do it discreetly. My husband was not a poor man. As he was not well loved, many would want to know his final resting place. I fear that they would steal from his grave, perhaps even desecrate it. And then, basically, Yuri confronts this woman and says, you have come to the right place. I assume you want
more. He gets
up
and walks around his desk to face her.
Burial? Yeah. And... it talks about Ichlarin and Amaskit and the River Numenon and all that. I found that an interesting reference, which, of course, is referring to Death's Lair.
Yeah, I noticed that one, too.
So I thought that, you know, we look at the next clue here and, you know, you read the next clue. And this next one is a riddle. You guys ready for this? Mm-hmm. My house is full of adventurers who were on the same quest as you. They're all... dead, and soon you will be too. On the bookshelf is where I lay. Seek me out, and you will pay. Don't let the trees attack you on the way. I first went to Death's house for this.
See, that one, there was only one place I could think of that trees attacked you.
Yep. Right. And, you know, I guess at the point... they do?
No.
Right. Okay. Thank you. But of course, this is referring to the trees that attack you in Draenor Manor. I don't know why I went to Death's House first. Perhaps I just kind of filtered out that last sentence.
Am I the
one? You're on your way. You're on the right track.
Yeah. So, anyways, you know, aside from the little, oh, I remember why I went to Death's House. He mentioned the River Numenon and Ichthlorin and Amaskid, and that's how you get down to the underworld.
Oh, yeah, that's true. That's right.
That's actually why I went.
Forget the clue scroll exists. Just go off the cutscene stuff.
Yeah. So that's one possibility with that, but that is not the correct answer. So I mean, you can run through Death's House and whatnot, but the answer is, of course, to search a bookcase in the western bedroom of Draenor Manor. And after you do that, you will receive your next clue. Actually, it's not in the bedroom. It's in the room with the fireplace and the table there. So
I think there's only one examinable bookcase there.
Yeah, and you see, I ended up on the other side of the wall because I don't know. I just assumed that it would be in that bedroom, but it wasn't because that's where Ava is. So, anyways, you search the bookcase there, and the clue changes, and it reveals a key, the casket key, and then you try and open the casket, but you can't actually, believe it or not.
What?
Sorry. I was thinking about the end, a different casket. It does open, and it reveals the necklace that you are going to use at the end of the quest. And it specifically tells you where to go, because this necklace effectively provides you with a compass clue. So I don't know about you guys, but when I do compass clue scrolls, I normally start in Taverly or Catherby, and then I just base it off of right there. And then I teleport somewhere else and kind of use a dead reckoning approach with that. So I went to Catherby, that wasn't it. Then I went to Sears Village, and that ultimately pointed the right way. And this points you back to McRubber Woods, of all places, Tannis. Mm-hmm. Wasn't that a joy to go back there?
Oh. It was awesome. And all the trees grew back, so you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The forester is not doing his job.
Anyways, you get in there, and once you do that, you discover that there is a hole where you can dig, and you need a rope. So you'll probably need to run to the bank to pick up a rope, because you're not doing this quest if you're you know, just winging it. You're not gonna have a rope on you, but hey, nonetheless, you put a rope down the hole, and then down we go into this mysterious cavern. And inside this cavern, you find at the end of a tunnel a tomb with, and you know, this is the point at which the quest, I was reminded, hey, turn the music on, because there's actually a new music track that unlocks here. Which, you know, you don't normally expect with a bottle quest, but I thought that was a nice touch, a really nice touch.
It's atmospheric, yeah.
So, now, you make your way to the end of the tomb, the end of the cave, and you find a tomb of, drumroll please, we find out.
McGruber.
No.
No.
Charles.
Yuri, he was dead all along. What a twist.
We find this coffin, and it's an old journal, and a vision forms of Yuri chatting with Charos. Now, that's a name we haven't heard for a long time, and this is where this quest became really interesting to me.
That's what I thought, too. I was like, the Ring of Charos? What? Okay.
So,
oh, that guy.
Yeah. Right? The one who, of course, forms the Ring of Charos. And the lore behind this is that Charos is in charge of the luck and the RNG in Gilenor. So,
surprise.
Now, for me, this is where this quest became really interesting, because if you think about it, when was the last time you heard of Charos?
When you used the Ring back in Castle Frankenstein and the Garden of Tranquility.
Right. So you don't use it all that often, but at the end of the day, you are here learning about Charos, but you're also learning about Yuri in the site that Yuri was going to be a grave robber But because of what happened with him when he interacted with Charos's tomb, and he has used his three wishes, all that you have asked for shall be, it turns out that Yuri is effectively corrupted, and because of that, Yuri is now the one who is in charge of handing out and determining clue scrolls for people within RuneScape.
So stepping back for a moment, Yuri got three wishes because one of Carlos's trinkets was a special jade statuette that theoretically granted any wish that the user desired. However, Carlos, to make sure that nobody actually stole it and used it for their own ill will, sort of booby-trapped it.
Precisely.
So that it would only grant three wishes and somehow kind of revert them to kind of curse the individual who took it.
Precisely. So, and it says, when Yuri gained the treasure he desires, he was cursed to become the one who guarded it. And this is why whenever you do an emote clue or whatnot, you get the double agent Yuri. And this effectively explains Yuri's position in lore now with the clue scrolls in game. And this is effectively fulfilling the job of the late Charos. Now, this is the point, as I said, that this quest became really interesting. This is what kicked it to a 5 for me. Because you have this little quest that is effectively a bottle quest, right? Mm-hmm. But you are cramming this much lore into it about Yuri, about clue scrolls that have been in game forever, practically. And, I mean, that's really something in my view. And that's what made me really enjoy this quest. On the surface, we'll get to the post-quest dialogue later and what happens, because there is actually a post-quest with this. Now, we don't get much from going forward and determining, you know, what's going to happen in the future based on this actual quest. This is effectively the culmination of this quest right here, is that, you know, Yuri is in charge of the cursed clue scrolls, and you need to break the curse by breaking one of the statues on the mantle. Which one did you guys choose first to break on the mantle?
The stone.
You chose the stone. Okay.
Yep.
How about you, Tanis?
I chose the stone.
Okay, I chose the demon. And of course, the stone was the right one. And if you look very closely, well, I mean, it says you do 9,900 damage, right? Because you have 99 constitution, but it kicks you outside.
Oh, okay.
So it doesn't actually die. It just kicks you out of the dungeon and you have to try again.
Yeah, I guess death doesn't really mean death in some situations.
Yeah, and I mean, it makes sense for the stone because that's like the stone of jazz, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, anyways.
If you read the journal, you'll also see the reason why it was the stone of jazz.
Oh, why was that?
Because Carlos was tasked by Lord Draken to try to find the stone of jazz. And what had happened was he was getting kind of frustrated over that, Draken sort of breathing on him. And so he decided to pull a prank on the great Lord Draken by messing with one of the ancient vampire traditions of hunting. So what happened was that he was the one tasked with creating the perfect creature to be hunted by the vampires as per the tradition. And then when he revealed it, it was a blood veld that was dressed in the colors of House Draken, and it had the jade stone of jazz tethered to its leg. And Draken saw that as an insult, like a taunt, saying that the stone will always be there in front of you, but you'll never get it. And this effectively caused Draken to not like Charles very much, and naturally Charles had to get the fudge out of there.
Yeah, and that leads us to the post-quest. But now, you see why this is interesting. It's because it fills in the lore about clue scrolls and Yuri. It tells this story about Lord Draken, even though I don't know if this quest is 6th Age or 5th Age. Do we know?
I think it's 5th Age, personally.
Okay.
Because, I mean, all this stuff that happened in the past, right? So naturally Draken... Well, okay, I'm not going to spoil any other quest. But we know, I think we know what happens to Draken. And
the RS Wiki says it's 6th Age.
Really?
Okay.
Because Yuri existed in the 5th Age. I mean, all that stuff is happening in the 5th Age. So
yeah.
Maybe right. The next quest after it's going to be a 6th age kind of quest, but I seriously think this one could totally pass off as a 5th age quest.
Neat.
Because it was all lore. It's all lore. Like, it's not really stuff that's currently happening.
Yeah. So basically what ends up happening with this is that at the end of this, you know, you break the curse by breaking the stone, and after that, you will obtain a puzzle casket from Yuri, and that's effectively quest complete. So, now on the surface, what do you guys think of this quest in terms of what it revealed before we get to the post-quest content? Because once again, well, I think we're already at interesting, but I think we can take it a step further.
Mm-hmm. I thought it was just really well written with the way that it weaved some things that had been in game for a really long time. And even though, like I said, it's not, like, I'm not really into clue scrolls and stuff like that, I actually did enjoy just the writing, the imagination, and I love it when they tie loose ends up and, you know, and you find out more. So in that respect, you know, really good.
Yeah, and I mean, it broke the, it effectively broke the curse on Yuri in this at the end, because you're able to, with this, you know, you restore him to your former self. I haven't done any clue scrolls from this, so I don't know if he's changed on the clue scrolls. Either of you guys know that?
Not.
Okay. So it's still the same thing.
He's still weird and cryptic and stuff, and he waves at you and he leaves stuff. I personally think, though, that he probably should have some alternate dialogue, like saying, good job, keep it up, or something like that. We know words of encouragement or whatever.
All right.
But no, he's still weird.
So let's just have a look here at some of the final dialogue in this quest. So point number one, my treasures are yours. The world's whoever wants them. I wouldn't touch them with an iron javelin. Who knows what trigger Charles has placed on them. I'll even help you find them if I can. Point number two, that old necklace you discovered, it belonged to Charles. I'd like your help with that if you are willing. And that kicks us off into the post quest. Because you have this old necklace, and I mean, it's missing part of its jade medallion to it, right? Mm-hmm. So, and after this, you effectively go on a hunt for this necklace and discovering more lore about Charos with this. So with that being said, after this, you can begin by basically just searching around the world using the book you got from this quest, figuring out where you want to go, based on the passages in the book. And when you are close enough, and you can scan on that necklace, and you will have the opportunity to dig up one of the trinket pieces. And there are 5 of them. Now, we're still in the spoiler blanket here, so I feel I can say exactly where they are. In the post-quest, the 5 trinkets can be found next to the doors of Castle Draken for number 1. Number 2 is in Fenkenstrain's Castle's Garden. Number 3 is by the Temple Paterdomus up on the Varrock side. Number 4 is in Drainer Village, north of Aggie's house. And number 5 is by the Catherby Grapple Tree. So, each of these little trinkets that you find will give you 10,000 dungeoneering experience. And these are a requirement on the Master Quest Cape as well. And the final necklace you get will be called the Necklace of Charos. And it doesn't appear to have any use for it right now, does it? But it feels like this will be something that's useful in the future.
Yeah. I feel like it's going to become another ring of visibility, where if you just kind of wear it and stuff, then future content may unlock some.
Now, a question for you, Alex. In terms of reading the lore, did you catch the bit about the gnomes?
A little bit. Yuri does kind of reference it directly, and Carlos does talk about using their magic and stuff.
Right. And this is really what kicks this quest up to the next level for me, is that in the end lore of this quest, you can basically talk about using no magic in this necklace. I think it wasn't said directly, but I think it's implied that this might link to the no magic, as was said, and because I think that's a fairly logical step, right?
Yep.
So I think this is gearing up to be a requirement for the finale of the Gnome series.
That is possible. I never actually thought of it like that.
And it means we're going to be touching no magic in that. And that is why I think this quest for me is a 5 out of 5, because it starts off as this basic bottle quest that is effectively a taunt, and then we find out it's about Yuri. Then it turns into something else where we're learning about Yuri and what he did. Then we get down to this cave and we figure out, oh, this is about Charles. We haven't heard of that guy in years. Then we, you know, you basically break the curse on Yuri. You free him and he says he wants help finding the pieces of this necklace. You get all 5 of them. You learn about Charles. You learn about Charles's escape from the East. And then the final part of that book talks about no magic. So I think that this is effectively a tease for the gnome finale whenever that comes out and the way that will go.
You think Charles is going to be play a key role in that?
Well, I don't know if it's going to be Charles exactly, because I think at this point we have to assume that person is gone or far away dead, right?
Well, gnome finale would be 5th age, though, right?
Yes, it would.
So that would still be alive.
That would be the reason why we consider this a quest of 5th age.
And that makes sense when you think about it, because I have not seen any notification that this might be 6th age or 5th age. So, but with that being said, I mean, this is effectively pointing at the gnome finale, and this all started off with a bottle quest. And that's why I got to give this a 5 out of 5, is because they managed to cram so much in there about treasure trails, about Yuri, about Charos, and effectively kind of throw in a nice little teaser for the gnome quest that, I mean, this is, in effect, the perfect quest, I think.
It is.
It's definitely layered. I mean, it's kind of the onion, you know, and layers on top of layers.
And it's very traditional in that sense for RuneScape quests. I do have to say that. This is the second kind of RuneScape traditional that there is. So, you know, totally a 5 out of 5 for me. I really do enjoy what we completed here. So, I'm trying to figure out a way of saying this, but I mean, I guess you could say at the end of it, it was almost a speechless kind of moment.
It was awesome.
Just to say, where we came from and what ultimately led to this. So, 5 out of 5 for me. How about you guys?
I hate to do it, but I can only give it a 4 out of 5. And only 2 reasons. One, I didn't like how it started. I want to at least be able to start a quest. Like, that wasn't really my
thing. Well, they're going to be fixing that on Monday.
Yeah. And so that's great. But the other problem I had was the rewards. It was like, here, do this clue, but your reward's going to be more clues. And then a casket that I couldn't do. So, you know, I mean, I did it, and the lore was kind of a reward in of itself, but for me, that was literally it. So, yeah, I can only go 4 out of 5.
All right. And for clarification, the rewards on this were 1 quest point. Easy, medium, hard, sealed clue scrolls, and a puzzle casket, which, from the looks of it, awarded medium clue rewards.
Yep.
So.
Nothing if you can't do a picture.
Right, because it was a puzzle box picture.
Yeah.
So.
And a good one, too.
Yeah, I don't know. I just really like this quest, and it's definitely up there. You know, I was hoping for Elemental Workshop, but this is a good close second.
Yeah, totally. Still puzzles and stuff.
Right.
Slightly more familiar, though, because Elemental Workshop is usually a whole new puzzle mechanic each and every time.
Yeah, that's right. So it
would be difficult to make.
This was much better than yeah, so.
Yeah, I have a feeling
I might have to amend my score. Put it in perspective.
5 out of 5 was not an Elemental Workshop 5.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
All right. Let's see. The 2 references to the gnome is in the book. Just, I want to get this on the record here. We're in Escaping the Hunt, where it said, "Escaping during the Great Hunt turned out to be a masterstroke. The vampires had their blood up, and not even Draken could stop them. Now, Draken was stalking Darkmire for me with Sunspear in hand, but I never revealed the power of my brooch to him. Its gnomic magic allowed me to look like whomever I choose, and I chose to look like a lowly juvenile to evade him.
Mm-hmm.
That was reference number one. Now, reference number two, near the end, was the name of Charos needed to pass into history. I began work on a simulacrum from within my workshop, taking what little I learned from the golems and the gnomes to construct a likeness of myself. It barely functioned. Walking was the limit, but it was enough.
Does that mean Charos might not be, or Charos might not be dead?
No, he's not.
Yeah, it's, from the sounds of it, it could could certainly mean that.
Oh, well, look at this last entry.
Yeah. I'll keep reading from there. I let it stroll into a village near White Wolf Mountain, and it lasted a little more than an hour. A young adventurer made the kill and likely a windfall of gold. I will admit, curiosity got the better of me, and I paid for a funeral. I kept it simple and attended as the tearful widow of Charos. No one came. I interned a few belongings that I would rather no one found, my necklace, some carvings, and one of my more malicious wishbringers, in case anyone dared to grave rob. And of course, that malicious wishbringer was Yuri. Now I chose an identity and become it wholly. Do I slay someone and steal their life, or do I construct a new one? I should choose one that allows me to continue my research into wishbringing. Being so close to death has made me eager to outlive it.
Oh, wow.
Was a statue, not Yuri. Yuri was just the byproduct of it.
Right? So Yuri was just there, and I don't think Yuri is Charos at this point.
No, he's not.
But now you see why I had to give this quest so much 5/5. Because we went from bottle quest about tag Yuri at to having a death threat, to solving a clue scroll, to learning about Yuri, to learning about the lore of clue scrolls, to learning about Charos, to ultimately having these fingers point towards the gnomes.
And he's alive. Like, this is cool. And, like, did we kill his golem accidentally or something?
Because he said
a young adventurer, you know, like, I'm trying to
He faked his death. He faked his death, basically. He made a fake himself, and then he sent it to basically wander around and get killed so that the public eye would know, think that, hey, Charles is dead. Hooray for us.
All right. I was just wondering if we were the
wanted man. Like, Draken was hunting him, and a couple other people were hunting him, and sounds like his encounter with the lady at Draenor didn't go very well, and she was probably hunting him. So basically, he had to die because his name was getting too. And the fact that nobody attended his funeral meant that apparently the whole world didn't in fact see him as a bad guy.
But you see, it says that he attended as his widow.
Yep.
Yeah, I wish that had been part of the quest. Like, because I didn't know this because I didn't do the post-quest. Like, I got down with the quest, I'm like, oh, quest complete. You know, that would have been cool if it was part of the actual, you know, stuff you have to do.
The lore is the reward for after quest stuff.
This changes things, doesn't it?
Complete the quest, like, all right, I'm done. No, I'm not. Keep going.
It's almost like a prophecy in a way that's finally coming true.
Hmm.
So it's really good. Really good. 5/5. I don't think I have anything else left to say about it.
No, I mean, I enjoyed it, and it took a couple things that I don't normally like to do, and I actually like it a lot more after sitting here and talking about it, because especially, man, I wish I had known that post-quest. That is really cool.
Yeah,
that just made it so much better.
See, as soon as I got to the Charos part at the end of the tomb, I was debating, okay, this could maybe be a 5, maybe, but that final post-quest stuff really took it over the edge. So yeah, that's you are it. It's so innocuous just looking at what we got there, right?
Yeah.
So, yeah, we warned you guys about spoilers, and we basically told you the entire quest.
Yeah, I guess we have to say Maude Osborn still reigns supreme, right, when it comes to the to the quest.
Yeah. Storytelling abilities, yeah.
Absolutely. I mean,
good job, Maude Osborn. Don't give up the day job.
Like, over the top, you know. Whew.
Yeah, totally. Fantastic quest.
And, you know, doing it, it was that just being struck by how significant it is. And, you know, you read this book, you read each passage to figure out where you're going next. But lo and behold, there you go. You learn so much. I mean, I let it stroll into a village near White Wolf Mountain. That's Catherby.
Mm-hmm.
And that tells you where the final piece is. But there's so much more in that. Definitely do the post quest, everyone who's here listening and who hasn't done this yet. But there we go. That's You Are It. All right. So we can lift the spoiler blanket now, I think.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to move on to the patch notes right here. So you guys have anything that really stuck out at you guys this week for patch notes?
I think the one I liked the most was that they put that option on Darren Light. Is it Darren Lightfinger? I was really hoping they did that. So that was really good. I was glad.
Yeah, so that's the first one here. There is now a hand-in option on Darren Lightfinger to fence all of your safe-cracking valuables for pilfer points or coins. This will hand in any items you are carrying all in one go, and you will need to speak to him to hand in a partial amount if you wanted to do that. Which makes sense, I think.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, originally you had to talk to him. You had to go through the whole orientation as though you'd never done it before. And then you have to specifically select how many things you wanted to give him.
Yeah. So much better now.
Indeed. Loot bags for safe cracking are now permanent unlocks, and the highest tier bag you have purchased will be replaced if lost.
That's good.
Reclaiming.
There are a couple guys in chat who are very relieved at that.
Yeah. Reclaiming a doctor or nurse's hat from the apothecary will no longer reset a Tale of Two Cats quest progress.
Oh,
that is interesting.
Remove the reference to stealing creation being in the wilderness temple of Santistan post-quest dialogue with the assassin at the dig site. And that makes sense because it hasn't been there for years in the wilderness. The toggle on-off option in the assist interface is now, once again, the left-click option. Okay.
Yay.
Amended the options on the squares in the tower puzzles so that right-clicking allows you to select between incrementing the value or directly selecting any number from 1 to 5. Left-clicking will increment as before. Oh, well, those tower puzzles.
Doors, it's going to be a lot more easier to do those particular puzzles.
Yeah. I don't know how I feel about them. I mean, I understand the algorithm and whatnot. It's just they take time. They take more time than the knots to do. So, yeah. Effigies bought from the traveling merchant in deep sea fishing will now be correctly set up when used. Okay.
That's good.
Clan admin broadcast messages now save and display correctly. Oh, good. I like that.
We can tell people how much they suck.
Added the Wyco Hunter outfit to the cleanup filter in the bank. Good. Posty Pete now offers alternative delivery options that allow you to choose where you want to have your parcel sent as a priority. You can choose to have them sent directly to your bank or directly sent to you. I know lots of people were concerned about this for daily scape reasons and whatnot.
Yeah, this is good. I'm glad they fixed it.
And then, I mean, that way then you don't need to log in every day and they'll just appear in your bank when you're done. So I don't know why they wouldn't have included that from the beginning, but good that it was fixed in a nice short amount of time. Posty Pete's postage stamps can now be stored in the currency pouch. Once again, another good thing while you're off skilling.
Yeah, very much.
Players' names in the friends and clan chants will no longer appear as bright white and instead have been reverted to their previous color. Once again, 1 week turnaround on the fix. That was pretty good. corrected an error in Mature Grotworm's drop table, which meant that Super Restorers never dropped, and Sarah Dome and Bruce were dropped too often.
I always thought that they dropped a lot. Okay.
Yeah, that makes sense. Increase the minimum size of the bank interface with an edit mode so that the bank will now show the full worn inventory rather than having a scroll bar because the window wasn't large enough. All right, that works. That works. Ability cooldowns are now reset at the end of a fight in a duel arena, which makes sense because these are kind of instance little fights. It doesn't make sense that your 2-minute long ability should be on cooldown when you leave a fight.
Yeah, for sure.
Let's see. Next up, you can no longer reset your Hellion aura with your Hellion daily reset.
So then you just keep on resetting the aura over and over again.
Yeah. That was interesting. It took so long to fix that one. Unless it wasn't a bug since it first arrived. So
who knows their mysterious ways.
Yeah, the fountains inside the Grand Exchange can now be used to fill Evil Dave's empty stew satchel within the quest. That's good. Mm-hmm. I remember we had that issue when the quest came out. We couldn't use the fountains. Improve the POH treasure chest interface with a menu that separates items by tier of treasure trail. This has been updated to include the master tier following the clue scroll update. Player-owned houses can now be reset at estate agents, and players will still retain their pets, aquarium, and butler should they wish to rebuild their menagerie, aquarium, and additional bedrooms, respectively.
That's a great one.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah, so you can effectively destroy the entire house, but you'll still retain everything else. Now,
what about the costume room, though? Have they ever fixed that one?
I don't know what happens if you do that with the costume room in this, because
I better not find out.
Because look at how much stuff is being stored in that costume room now.
Quite a lot. But you'd think by now with that bank update that it would all be instanced in the bank itself.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking, but who knows? I mean, I don't necessarily want to destroy my house to test this.
Oh. I don't want to either because I still have that one glitched room.
Oh, glitched room?
Back when it came out. I have a teleport room, and right now it's hovering over my menagerie.
Oh boy, that goes way back to the week construction came out.
Yep, that's right. And I just left it there because it was awesome.
Wow, okay.
Now, since they've been doing graphical updates and stuff, it just keeps getting better and better.
Oh boy.
Like, I see it as an inverted cube when I'm on the first floor.
Oh, I remember those construction bugs. They were amazing in terms of what they brought in. All right. And the last patch note is unfinished potions now have a mix on left click when held in your inventory when you have both components in your inventory. So
surprise.
It's basically going to mean that take one step away from being able to not have to click on items to use them. So very nice indeed.
It also saves you from misclicking stuff.
Yes.
Alrighty, so that's it, the patch notes. Anything else? In those?
No.
Really? Alrighty. Unless we want to go into detail about how much that...
How much what?
That one update was awesome. No.
I don't know what update you're talking about.
I'm kidding.
Okay. So this week we do have a new Treasure Hunter promotion, and I thought I'd just mention this. It's called Chainlink, and the idea behind this is that if you open up Treasure Hunter, you'll see the new Locks and Links interface, and with this you can win Locks for XP and Links for bonus XP, and then you basically got to figure out the best way to spend them. Okay, it's interesting to combine these two. You choose a row or a column to chain your XP, and chaining skills, that means that all the skills highlighted within the box will be granted XP or bonus XP, and then you can check your boost on the right-hand side of the screen, and it'll indicate how much you're receiving for your multiplier. So they're in effect turning this into a little game and basically forcing people to optimize the way that they get their XP from this. I haven't tried it yet. What do you guys think of bringing this in?
Novelty.
I don't know. Is this a like workaround from a game of chance or something? Like, I don't.
That's interesting that you say that. Very interesting that you say that. I'm actually going to have a look at that right now. I haven't had a look at that since it's activated. I think, on the 10th. So we could have a look at this right now on the show as we're doing this, because I've done.
So basically, what happens is that you open up, when you get a chain, you click on the chain, you get the interface up, and one of the skills will be highlighted. That's sort of your big bonus skill. And when you click on it, you'll see in the, like, for instance, in the bottom right, it'll show that skill and then a couple of empty squares. And if you click that one, you will see that it will chain itself to the adjacent skills around that in its grid. So, instance, if you get the Slayer icon as your the one that you choose, then it'll highlight stuff around, say, what's next, the construction and some other stuff, and cooking and all that stuff. So you get experience in all those skills.
All right, so here's a medium chain. Small chain, okay. Small lock, emerald golem head. Okay, that's separate. And a huge chain. That's nice. So if you redeem the huge chain, now, looking at this, and see, that's why I wanted to show this on the show. It's kind of confusing here. Because if I click Herblore, I mean, let's see, what does this do?
So click on one of those empty squares that are next to the...
I got bonus XP in Herblore. Right. Okay. Oh.
You see, it kind of highlights a square around it.
Oh, I see what it's doing. So you got to go for in then regards. So if I click the bottom left one around smithing, I can click crafting. Then I click confirm crafting. Now I get bonus XP in crafting, and I link those two together.
Yep.
Now, same for fire making. I go up, and I can get any of the surrounding ones. So if I click bottom left below fire making, I can actually get confirmed dungeoneering, and I get bonus XP in dungeoneering. Mm-hmm. And my modifier is just 1.0. So how does that work?
Did you click on the highlighted skill?
Oh, there we go. Okay.
Because there's a skill that's highlighted, right?
Right. So if I go for a different row, then...
Yep, there you go. Or just click on that one particular
skill. Then I get
skill
XP
and
all the skills.
To a skill that you do want.
Am I the only one who finds this remotely confusing?
No, I'm totally confused.
It took me a couple tries myself. Don't worry about it.
And that's why I wanted to talk about this, because, I mean, on its surface, it's a treasure hunter update. But you just saw, if you guys are watching the video version, how confusing that is.
Yeah. And you pay to be that confused enough.
Oh, I was using my daily spin.
Well, yeah. I mean, but I'm just saying. Yeah. I don't think this one's going to go real well.
Yeah, okay. I mean, unless I'm, you know, just misunderstanding it, but...
Again, novelty.
I mean, and I mean, if you click one of the rows, you can get XP in 9 of the skills. And if you click one of the columns, you can get bonus XP in those ones. So... I don't know. It's very confusing.
It's way too fun. Much thinking for a treasure hunter.
Yeah, and I mean, chaining skills means that all the skills highlighted within the box will be granted XP or bonus XP, and then the boost amplifies that. But what governs the boost? I don't know. But I don't know. Maybe someone
course,
else listening to this,
that
can
this
complain
treasure
that,
hunter
can update
came out
that.
The week that You Are It came out, so everybody's probably all burnt out from that to figure things out. Yeah. So.
Well, and it's just I don't know how useful that is, because when you're trying to get. If you want bonus XP, you don't want it spread out in a whole bunch of different skills. You're really wanting it in one particular area.
That's right.
So like I said, novelty.
All right. So just a quick reminder before we move on that if you want to see what we're up to early on in the week, just head on over to youtube.com/rsbnb, get the weekly bite covering the week's RuneScape updates and whatnot. This week, of course, was all about You Are It, youtube.com/rsbnb. That comes out every Monday. Me or one of the other RSBNB update folks does that, and have a listen. youtube.com/rsbnb. All right, you guys ready for some discussion questions?
Oh, yeah.
All right, so Thebes is back this week, and he's talking about the thieving update from last week. So he says, hey, guys, I just wanted to post some clarifications in regards to safe cracking from last week. I will preface that I do enjoy the trading method. I just think that it has some pretty serious flaws. So dwarf traders are about 800k XP per hour at level 99 plus, and were the best thieving method before safe cracking. This method requires, and to get this rate of XP, over 13 million XP gained in the thieving skill, the crystal mask spell unlocked after the light within, the soul in the box unlocked after Nomad's elegy, the Ardoyan 3 cloak, the full black ibis outfit, full camouflage, the discontinued cheeky monkey pet, and crucially, the legendary thieving aura, which can only be used for an hour with a 3-hour cooldown. Level 83 safe cracking is achieving rates of 700k XP per hour, and this rate requires over 2 million XP gained in the thieving skill, 40 agility and 46 herblore. Access to Yanil, Ardoyan, and Camelot, and 58 magic is the highest requirement here. Level 96 plus safe crackers are now netting rates of upwards of 1.1 million XP per hour, and this rate requires almost 10 million thieving XP gained in the skill, 48 agility and 46 herblore, the Wilderness Sword 3, the Summer's End quest, and the Ritual of Majorat. Now some other miscellaneous facts. Elf worker pickpocketing at level 99 plus is about 450k XP per hour. And this is what we said on the show here. You know, we said 300k XP per hour, and that was effectively the lead bag training method unoptimized, right? Pyramid Plunder at 99 plus is 250k XP per hour, and level 62 plus safe cracking is now 250k XP per hour. It's important to note that safes aren't seemingly affected by my thieving level, aura, or other equipment. Therefore, a level 99 will be opening safes just as a level 62 thief. Rather than taking the opportunity to make other thieving methods more diverse, enjoyable, or worthwhile, the problem with this update is that Jagex made all the other training methods obsolete. And I think we touched on this in the podcast last week, is that it wasn't necessarily a problem with safe cracking being bad. It was just that everything else is looking rather bland at this point and needs an update to bring it into the modern line.
So in other words, it was too good.
Yeah, that's one way of looking at it. He continues on and he says the thieving skill is now effectively the safe cracking skill, and personally I find this rise in XP rates at the early levels truly alarming. In general, this update can't be summed up better than Parnassus' analysis. This isn't diversification, this is replacement. And compare this to a recently revamped skill like Fishing that now has a countless lower level methods like Menaphos or Shiloh or Barbarian Fishing to high level AFK urchins, less AFK but more money sailfish, or even less AFK but more money jellyish to Wabagong Fishing to Fishing Frenzy pure XP. Thieving is now effectively level 1 to 62 thieving guild and 62 to 100, 200 mil safe cracking. And this is coming from a 200 million XP player. So,
well,
I think that pretty much sums things up, doesn't it? And, you know, this is the general sense that I wanted to get to last week with the show, but I didn't have all the numbers in place, and I didn't have all the personal experience with it to do that.
Right. See, here's my question, and you can read about this in my Informer article this week.
At informer.rsbnb.com.
That's right. Thanks, Shane. Just because something's always been... I mean... Are we always restricted forever by the training methods that are already in game? We can never, ever, ever have something that may infringe on the way things always used to be. Like, how are we to move forward? How are you ever to move forward in anything if you can't replace something or make something better? Like, I feel like that is being stuck in the past, and we need to be thinking about the way forward. And the way forward is attentiveness versus AFK. That is where the reward is. That is where we're going, and that's where we need to go.
Yeah, and we got the AFK with safecracking.
But you can be attentive too. It's more it's not the same thing as it used to be, where it was like, okay, well, this method is AFK and this method is active and this method is a combination of both, but it's crap on both ends, so no one's going to do that. Now it's more like, this is a method and you can do it how you want to do it. The more active you are, the more rewards you get. To me, that is the right way. But we are going to break things along the way. It is important to know that in a game that is 17 years old, you're going to break stuff. And it's okay to break stuff. It has to change. Like, it has to. This isn't the only skill that you can get 1 mil an hour.
Yeah, I agree. And, you know, this is a lot, it feels a lot like the discussions we would be having with RuneSpan.
I could see that back then, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Because
I can,
because
I guess I can
no,
see the
there,
similarities,
right?
Yeah.
And
it was a gamble.
And I mean, there is, you can still do the, you could have still crafted old fashioned runes back then, right? But there was no reason to. Mm-hmm. Now you have a choice, and I think if we were to sum what Thieves said here down, it's that if you want the best XP, it is now in safe cracking. And, you know, you get a little bit of money from the elves, but beyond that, there's no reason to do anything else.
Well, and I think Thieves is right when it comes to the requirements for dwarf traders. They are high. Now, does that mean they're dead? I don't know. I mean, and only time is going to be able to tell that. But what I'm saying is, even if it is dead, so what? So what? It doesn't matter. We can't be restricted just because that dwarf traders were the best. So we can't ever do anything better than 800K ever with less requirements. Like, we can't have that mentality, or this game is going to be stale. Like, how do you work around that?
Yeah, and I mean, what this, like, when you look at safe cracking on its own, it's a relatively small piece of content compared to deep sea fishing. And that's why deep sea fishing was able to affect change through the entire fishing skill. But, you know, looking at this right now, I think the solution to this would have been to make pickpocketing valuable when this update arrived.
Yeah, for me, okay. If there is a problem with safe cracking, I think the problem is, so here's, it's almost like the law of unforeseen consequences, right? So they were trying to fill a gap between just agonizing pyramid plunder forever from 62 to 91, right? That's what they're trying to really make better. But that, I think, is that if there's a flaw, that is the flaw area, because this is actually better for high levels. So this adds to me, this adds diversity to high levels, much more than where they were aiming at. So I don't know if, like,
I think
this should have been a high level update or what, and maybe something different in those middle ranges. Like, I'm not sure about that.
Yeah. And I mean, I come back to the same feeling I had on last week's show. You know, safe cracking is great. But at the same time, there is no it effectively, and I'm going to agree with Thieves here, it puts thieving into the RuneSpan situation that RuneSpan was in, where it makes it that core aspect of the skill. unless you're, at the
always
going to
have a core aspect
plus.
Of a skill, right?
Right. But at the same time, there is one. It's like a one-way street, just like RuneSpan was for all those years. And I don't have any intention of training thieving in the future going forward, so I can't answer this for you guys. But I would ask someone out there who is going to train thieving, who is, you know, going for 200 mil, let's say, are you going to spice it up by going to the elves every so often?
Yeah, I think that they have very specific reasons. And as somebody that's, I've been working thieving since the first, and I'm doing elves. If I have to go make a sandwich, I'm going to lodestone over the Priv and steal for a while. And then I might go back to safe cracking. It's just, I don't see the problem with making, in my opinion, this makes it better. But I'm not married to tradition. I don't think we can be. I think if we do that, then we're in the same boat as the players that didn't want to go to EOC because it's too big of a change. Like, I understand what you're saying with RuneSpan, but like, that was making runes. That was like, crafting runes was the whole thing about rune crafting. And I don't see safecracking as like, there is no like central kind of core with thieving, in my opinion, because we've had so many different things that you could do. You know, from pickpocketing men and women and heroes and monkey knives, all that stuff in the old days, and stealing from stalls and all that. Then you had the thieving guild, which came along after I was even out of those levels. So I know you can do a lot there. And then you had pyramid plunder. There's so many different aspects of thieving that I don't see how this just destroys them all. And even if it does, we have to be willing to do that from time to time, I think.
What do you think, Alex?
Well, again, like you're saying, I think he's misinterpreting the point of training thieving, because thieving is sort of a gathering skill of sorts. You use it in order to get rich and stuff. You go to the elves and you pickpocket them, not for the training, but to get all the delicious clue scrolls they have to offer and stuff. And safecracking, in my opinion, does not offer that much in the way of rewards. So, in fact, I think the only thing I would say against safecracking is they try to advertise it as sort of an ivy, like a woodcutting ivy sort of training method in which you kind of run around and stuff, you get lucrative experience, but not really any big rewards. My one issue is that you can get cash rewards from this method of thieving as well.
You guys don't see it as safe cracking as like RuneSpan where everyone's going to do it? Because, I mean, when you look at the numbers right here, you're going to go do safe cracking.
Yeah, totally.
For the best XP, you're going to go do that. And that was the idea with RuneSpan as well.
But I don't think it's just because of XP numbers. I think it's like there's a pain in the ass factor. Like people want to do RuneSpan because it made runecrafting so much better. Because running runes sucked. Just like
Dwarf Traders
Plunder kind of sucks. You know, like it's just an enhancement. Because Alex is right. Like you might get a little bit of money, but it is a token amount of money compared to what you could do at Priv or something. I mean, you really don't get much when it comes to like GP with this method. It just makes it better. It gives you something to do, you know?
Mm-hmm. You know, it feels very much like RuneSpan, and I am going to agree that, you know, yes, I'm going to say safe cracking is great for the higher levels and whatnot. I am in agreement with that. That was a good update. But with the recent talk of skilling diversity, there needs to be a look at what is going on with the other skills, or rather in below the thieving skill at the lower levels, and determining where people are going to go. Because I don't know about you, but I know people who will not do a training method unless it's the best XP in the game. And that's what safe cracking has effectively done.
But if that's the case, like, you gotta break some eggs, right? You gotta crack some eggs if you're, like, so what would you say about fishing at lower levels? What are you gonna do? You're gonna do Minifoss, right?
For
XP, what other
sure.
choice would you have?
Sure, yeah.
You know what I mean? What, how is that any different?
Well, it depends on what you are trying to train. If you are trying to go for the experience to go to Minifoss,
I think it comes also down to the essence of the skill.
Fish sailfish and stuff.
Because if you look at a thieving guild or you look at a safe, it's not traditional pickpocketing. And I think that's what's being missed here. And I'm going to just point this out, and I think hopefully thieves would agree with this, is that when you have 200 million thieving XP and your name is Thieves, I think there's going to be some level of bias associated with you and the skill. And, you know, I think that that is something that's also here, is that traditional element that thieving guild and safe cracking probably doesn't feel like standard thieving.
It doesn't, but I think of that as a good thing. You know, I think it's we're overdue in the skilling community. We're overdue for some shakeups like this, and it's good. When is the last time that skilling really was shaken up? It's been the same thing since 2001. Like, you might get a new method once in a while, but I mean, at most, that's it. And I feel like, yes, this is safe cracking, but it's a philosophy. It's a way of doing things that is coming out this year that I think really sets the groundwork for what to expect in the future.
All right. I don't know. I feel like safe cracking is runespan for thieving at level 62 plus, in that it's the only thing you're going to do if you're concerned about XP.
So do yourself a favor and don't be concerned about XP. Just enjoy the game for as it
is. Well, that's what I try and tell people, but I get laughed at.
But it's no different than any other skill. I mean, if you're going to do it for XP, you're going to do whatever that method is for whatever that skill is.
Yeah.
Like, it's not like there's different choices in other skills.
Right. And that's like, what I think isn't being said in this question to us, is that it leaves out traditional thieving, stalls, pickpocketing, etc.
Yeah. Look, those could be better. Those definitely could get revamped. They could be better. I wouldn't be opposed to that.
All right. Well, there we go. There's the answer.
But I don't think we hold safe cracking like responsible for saying
no. Definitely.
Well, we can't do safe cracking because everything else
it's needed
will
to happen
suck.
Like that beforehand. I mean,
yeah, okay, cool. Let's do it all at the same time, and then we'd be happy, right? I mean.
Presumably.
I just someone to find something to be unhappy about, right?
I mean, presumably, otherwise you end up with a mining and smithing beta kind of update, right?
That's true. That's true.
But yeah, I mean, the numbers are out there, and I think we have just effectively reaffirmed our views from last week. Safe cracking is good. The rest of the skills should probably be looked at for diversity's sake, yes?
I think so. Yeah. Construction especially.
All right, good. Thank you, Thieves. Next one here from the RR Man. Hey, all. Hope is all is well. I've been away from the game for a few months, just having one of those usual breaks from the game that every player seems to need to. It also seems like I've missed out on a lot, and it seems like this year is going to be killer with some crazy updates. Also note, I'm behind on the podcast, so you may have dealt with some of these. So number one, it's been a few months since the new clues have come out. Are you still doing them, and what's your biggest win so far? So let's address this right off the bat. As for me, a couple mil, and it was the result of getting two ancient rune armor pieces, Zaros armor pieces, in one clue due to my ring luck of the dwarves.
Yep. Nice.
Yeah.
That's kind of luck.
So I still think the update was just a great update, and it was needed, and I had every intention to actually try a clue until I got halfway through my easy hidey holes, and then I said, I am so over this, and haven't done another one until this quest. So,
all right. How about you, Alex?
I've always just enjoyed clue scrolls, and adding masters to it just added to the experience altogether, so I enjoyed that as it is. And so it was a great update. It was a great addition to something I already liked, and so thumbs up to that.
All right. I've taken a bit of a break from actually doing them because there were just so many people doing them when it came out that the prices of the items dropped down a bit. So I'm, you know, kind of just waiting to see when the next alchemical onyx jewelry comes out. Then people can start disassembling those and we'll see the item prices go up again. So number two, the player-owned farm idea is amazing. Super shocked that it's meant to be out this year. What's your favorite farm animal? I, of course, will default to a sheep before anyone interjects.
I don't know how to feel about that.
Oh, he's from New Zealand.
Oh, okay. Okay. I don't even know. I don't know. An alpaca?
I was about to say the exact same thing.
Were you? Okay. Yeah, that's what I'm going with there.
Oh, I think if I had to choose anything, it'd probably just be a standard cow because that, I mean, you don't get more farm than that, right?
That's true. No. You can get milk and, you know, steak.
Yeah, unfortunately, we're not going to be able to slaughter them. That was voted down.
Ah, bummer.
How about you, Alex?
Do dragons count?
Yes, there's actually going to
be... Yeah, you can farm them here.
Yeah, mm-hmm. There's going to be a dragon.
Totally don't do dragons. Totally like to farm dragons.
All right, yeah, it's going to be interesting to watch this update. You know, this is very much going to be in the same kind of boat as the thieving update, making sure it doesn't change the core skills too much. But I think if it adds an alternative method to farming aside from the standard tree run, I think that'd be fine.
Yeah, there's not a whole lot in the farming skill, you know. I mean, so we have what, tree runs and grapes?
Yeah, grapes for GP.
Yeah.
All right, number three. When did you last do Dunge? Of course, I think it's still a mini game, but I must say last time I did it, it was a lot more bearable. There were so many quality of life fixes. That means you don't need to worry about min-maxers telling you what to do or getting angry. Cheers for the great show. It's great to catch up on all the updates after not playing for a few months. Cheers, the RR man.
Hey.
Last year sometime.
Okay. That doesn't surprise me at all. I would say, yeah, I guess mine would have been last year. My last floor for 120, I got the pet, and I have never done a floor since then. So that is it. You can't go out better. You can't go out on a better high note than that.
Yeah.
So I was done.
Alrighty. Alex?
And I think my last time, engineering is usually my go-to skill for double XP weekend because everything.
Okay, that makes sense.
As far as I want to go. But sure. I did go on this other one trip, which is kind of interesting, that I was just trying to spend my cards and stuff. And I had a group that was just in a big, giant hurry and stuff. And I was the one to open up the last room, and everyone's already opted to go on, and they're waiting for me to click go continue floor so they can complete the floor. But the room that I got, the last room we got to, had a soul gazer in it. And so I was saying, oh, guys, I got to go for this because it's a soul gazer, right? And they're like, dude, you're not going to get a Hex Crispo. Guess who I got a Hex Crispo? And I got it. I found it with like 10 seconds remaining on the timer. I was in a hurry and like just got it and I couldn't show it to him.
Oh, I would have been so ticked if it was.
So yeah, I cheesed all those guys up. Like, got a Hex Crispo, have fun. And again, because it was only 15 seconds remaining, there was no possible way I could have traded it to somebody more deserving. So I just took it, bound it, and that was it.
Nice.
Yeah.
That was my last trip. So I haven't actually used it yet.
Alrighty. Well, I think that sums up that question. I don't know if there's anything else on that, but if you guys want to send your own questions in, email them to questions@rsbnb.com. We also have the Google Voice number, which is 571-57BNB. You can also send text messages there. And you can leave us a DM on Twitter @rsbnb.
Remember to keep it clean because once you get Shane started, he's not going to want to stop.
It's true. That is true.
All right. So this week, Google's doing something called Google I.O. And oh boy, yeah, they're gonna try and change the world this week.
No problem.
They're focusing on AI heavily, and they have made talking to Google Assistant more natural with a new feature called continued conversation. And basically what this does is it makes the Google Assistant feel more natural. So instead of having to say, hey, Google, or okay, Google, every time you want to say a command, you only have to do it the first time. And basically the company is going to be adding this new feature here that allows you to ask multiple questions with the same request. So basically what this means is you're also going to be able to have, you know, a standard conversation and ask follow-up questions to them. And you don't need to throw in the, hey, Google, thing every time you want to ask a question. Now, there's also something else with this update. So, you know, Google Assistant is very much like Siri and Amazon Echo. And, you know, some of them are great, some of them aren't great. And Google also revealed a new piece of technology called Duplex that is going to be worked into Google Assistant. So let's just have a listen and see what exactly we're capable of with this. I think it's going to freak some people out. So, you ready for this?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you guys have you guys heard this before we began?
Yeah, I have.
All right. So, here we go. This is an actual phone call that was made, apparently.
To this example, let's say you want to ask Google to make you a haircut appointment on Tuesday between 10 and noon. What happens is the Google Assistant makes the call seamlessly in the background for you. So what you're going to hear is the Google Assistant actually calling a real salon to schedule the appointment for you. Let's listen.
Here we go.
Hello, how can I help you?
Hi, I'm calling to book a women's haircut for a client. I'm looking for something on May 3rd.
Sure, give me 1 second.
Mm-hmm.
Sure, what time are you looking for around?
At 12 p.m.
We do not have a 12 p.m. available. The closest we have to that is a 1:15.
Do you have anything between 10 a.m. and 12 p.m.?
Depending on what service she would like, what service is she looking for?
Just a woman's haircut for now.
Okay, we have a 10 o'clock.
10 a.m. is fine.
Okay, what's her first name?
The first name is Lisa.
Okay, perfect. So I will see Lisa at 10 o'clock on May 3rd.
Okay, great. Thanks.
Great. Have a great day. Bye.
Goodbye.
That was made by an AI.
That's awesome.
It even had the in the middle of it there.
Yeah, I noticed that this time. I didn't notice that the first time, but, you know, I'm not really that.
Then you've got to start worrying.
I'm not worried about this one, though, because I bet you it took at least 100 calls before you got that one.
You'd be surprised. You'd be surprised, believe it or not. Here, I got another one for you. That was a good one. And there are ones that go bad, and just listen how it can recover and handle ones that don't go well.
So, take a listen.
This is the show on this.
See how I hear you?
Hi, I'd like to reserve a table for Wednesday the 7th.
For 7 people?
It's for 4 people.
4 people? When?
Next Wednesday at 6 p.m.
Oh, actually we reserve for up to 5 people. For 4 people you can come.
How long is the wait usually to be seated?
When tomorrow or weekday or?
For next Wednesday, the 7th.
Oh, no, it's not too busy. You can count for 4 people, okay?
Oh, I gotcha. Thanks.
Yeah. Bye-bye.
That was not the AI's fault.
That's right. So... And the AI recovered from that.
That brings me to my second point. Normally, I get really scared with this stuff, and I think, oh, man, this is going to put a lot of people out of work. But when it comes to customer service, usually it's hard to communicate anyway, and my experience is not very good, so whatever. Go Google.
And what they're also going to do with this technology is reverse it so that, you know, if there's a store or something that has questionable hours for a holiday, they're going to use their AIs and call these stores and update the search results on Google in real time.
Thanks.
For that.
Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm. So
which one of those was the AI? I'm just curious.
In the first one.
The second one.
The second one was the was the male.
Oh,
is he for real? He's not for real, right?
And in the first one, it was the one booking the appointment for Lisa.
Cool.
So,
just checking.
Yeah, and you know they're going to be rolling this out in limited testing soon. They hope to bring it into Android P later this year. They're also bringing out Google Photos with some AI augmentation, including automatically creating collages, movies, and stylized photos, as well as other AI-powered fixes like black and white photo colorization, brightness correction, and suggested rotations. Now, they're also going to be bringing the Google Assistant, which you guys all have in your Google Android phones, and the Google Assistant device to YouTube and smart displays. Google Assistant and YouTube are coming to smart displays. So if you have a smart display, you potentially have the Google Assistant right built into it. Google also is bringing Assistant to Google Maps, and the idea behind this is it'll be available on both iOS and Android, and it'll provide better recommendations, and they also want to make maps more personalized with this. Finally, they're bringing out something called a new generation of software for its TPU machine learning hardware, which will basically apply to every product that Google has out there, and it will basically enable technologies like what we heard in the booking of the appointment. And finally, Google News is getting an AI redesign, and they appear to be going after Facebook with this. The new version of Google News with its new news app, which will launch next week, will, quote, allow users to keep up with the news they care about, understand the full story, and enjoy and support publishers they trust. So for those people wondering about Google Reader and RSS, there's no real look for it to come back.
See, that's good and bad. Like, anybody that wants to suck it to Facebook, I'm all for, but I'm very apprehensive about allowing people to just bury themselves even further within their own bubble. Like, you have to look at news from different perspectives if you want to be able to make a educated decision. Like, I feel like that could really
we'll have to wait and see how it looks like when it arrives in terms of, you know, shifting around people's perceptions and whatnot, and seeing if they can prevent or present all sides of the story, you know? So
Yeah.
I don't know. It's going to be a hard thing to do, but I will definitely be having a look at that news app when it arrives, because that's a big interest to me. That's Google.
The right side into it? You try to incorporate the right side into it?
No. We already do that in a different way with some other stuff out there and utilizing Twitter and whatnot, so... All right. Next piece of tech news. iOS 11.4 disables Lightning Connector after 7 days, limiting law enforcement access. So iOS 11.4 is currently being beta tested, and this is going to include a new USB restricted mode that sets a week-long expiration date on providing data access to the Lightning port. And the reason they're doing this is because there is apparently a series of boxes going around that can be used on devices to break the passcode locks on them. So if the device stays inactive for 7 days, basically Apple will say, no, you can only use the Lightning cable to now charge the device, and you're not going to be able to access it with one of these boxes. So this is being tested right now in 11.4. And that's pretty quick when you look at how quick these devices came around.
That's good.
Yeah. And you know, it's out there. And this is what Apple has been crusading on for the last number of years now. So they're always talking about privacy updates and whatnot. So hopefully this does indeed make it into the 11.4. I don't see why it wouldn't, but this would be a huge step forward. And hopefully the folks who make Android will take note of that. So it makes me feel good about using an iPhone, I think.
Yeah, and if you're really concerned about privacy like that, you might want to not be using your fingerprint.
Yeah.
Thumbprint.
Yeah.
Because you can be compelled to use that.
Yeah, the best way of doing it is just to have a long password on your phone. And, you know, you normally see the 4 or 6-digit passcode, but you can actually opt for a longer passcode where you actually have to type it in with your keyboard. That's the best way of securing an iPhone. So. Mm-hmm.
Learn something new every day. I didn't know that.
Yeah, so you can what set about that Android? Up. I don't know. I'm not an Android user. I don't know. I assume it's something similar. All right. Now, final piece of tech news this week. Valve has announced something called Steam Link for iOS and Android. So you guys might remember that there was a Steam Link piece of hardware, and what this would have effectively allowed you to do was stream your Steam games to a TV, but they're taking that one step further, and they are now allowing you to stream any game inside your Steam library to this mobile app. You will need to be either on an Ethernet network or over 5 gigahertz wireless connection inside your own Wi-Fi network for this to work, just to, you know, ensure it has sufficient speed. But, you know, this brings mobile gaming to anywhere in your house, basically, or anywhere you have Wi-Fi access to your Steam library.
So cool. So cool. Since it's a app, can you get it on a, like a smart TV, or if you're using like an Apple TV or something, can you get it? Can you play the games like that?
That's next up this summer, apparently.
Oh, snap. Oh, that's cool.
Is it local area network only, or can it be
LAN only?
Over Wi-Fi?
LAN only.
Like over, I have no idea. Okay.
Yeah. So, and you know, you're going to be able to use all the custom controllers and whatnot that the iPhones support. Basically, if you can use that controller for a mobile game on an iPhone, you'll be able to use that with Steam Link. Stated to release on May 21st.
Ooh.
Though, with that being said, I have many games in my Steam library. I don't know how many of them would be easy to play with touch.
I'd be surprised.
That's a good point. Like, you need a controller.
Yeah, like, I mean, TF2, for example. How would you do that?
With the VR?
I mean, that's one way they could definitely go in the future. So, I don't know. I'm trying to think of a game where I could end up using this.
Golf with Friends.
Oh, there's one. That would work. That's nice and simple.
Totally. Mm-hmm.
So maybe this is just to open up options for people making games.
Yeah, that's another thing as well. And though, I mean, I don't know if you're going to want to use it for a shooter, because when you're looking at something like Wi-Fi streaming, you're still going to have a little bit of lag to it, and that's not going to cut it.
I don't know. I mean, Fortnite's doing it.
Fortnite? Yeah, they have their own mobile app. Have you tried that on mobile?
Oh, heavens, no. This is how I play Fortnite. Find a place, hide in that place. Move when you have to move.
I was actually thinking of bringing that back as a pick of the week at some point, mobile Fortnite.
You know, you laugh, but I've actually came in second twice doing that.
Oh, that's great. All right. I don't know. I'll definitely have a look at this when it arrives and see what's in my Steam library that might work. So, yeah, definitely golf with your friends is popping up there. So,
mm-hmm. And a lot of the, like, anything that you have that's like a classic retro style game, turn-based, probably be fine.
Tabletop
like
Darkest
Dungeon, stuff like that.
Tabletop Simulator.
Tabletop Simulator, yeah.
That'll go well. Yeah.
Train Simulator.
Yeah, I want to play that. I still I don't have that.
It's not worth it.
Oh, really? Okay.
No, don't. Yeah, don't.
Okay. Just watch the video.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's not like a flight simulator or anything. It's not worth it.
Oh, really? Okay. No.
Universe Sandbox. That's another good one that I'll try.
That would be a good one.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So we're going to move on to our other things right now. So our skill of the month for the month of May is thieving, and we actually have a race going on here right now. Sorensen 57 is in first place with 18.8 million XP gain. Tanis, you're in second with 13.7, though you and Sorensen were tied for the first three days of the month.
Yeah, and I went camping with the fam.
Good on you, mate.
And then we got the RR man in third with 6 million XP gain, the number of people at 5 and 4 million. So, yeah, it's definitely a bit of a race. So, should be interesting to see where this one drops down, all things considered. So, nice to see a bit of a race going on here.
It's a long month. And I was going to ask you, Shane, have you ever had a host or a co-host ever won Skill of the Month before?
Yes, I've won a farming Skill of the Month before.
You did? Okay. All right.
Yeah.
Very, very small company there then, right?
Yeah, that's right.
Just Shane.
I don't know if there's anyone else on this list who would have. Let's see. Dave, but I don't think he was hosting at that time.
What about Tim?
No, he wasn't hosting. Do you see him often?
Not very. He is busy.
Okay. Yeah, I don't think so. No.
I was just curious. I thought about that earlier.
Oh.
Oh, cool.
All right. So moving on to our achievements of the week this week. We got 9 of them. So we're going to start off on May 7th. Cyan Panur got 99 thieving. I Defend got 99 fire making, also on the 7th, and Reggie Ice got 99 fire making, also on the 7th of May.
And on the 6th, we have Canard with 120 Slayer. Nice. And we have Nidhogg 1 with 99 Herblore on the 6th, and Thunderpaw with 120 Invention on the 6th.
Nicely done.
And following along, we've got Sina underscore ATN with 99 Hunter on the May 6th. We've got Canard, not Mallard, 120 Slayer, May 6th.
Oh, he got 120 Slayer twice. Oops.
Yep. Definitely got 120 Slayer. In fact, he caught two. He killed two things simultaneously, so he got double the messages. That's what would be a shame. And we've got Neje, Canadian pronouncing, 99 Magic on May the 3rd.
Good job, everyone. That was actually 8 achievements, but we'll allow it.
120 Slayer is a big achievement. It's deserving a second go. In fact, I'll give you a third. Canard, 120 Slayer, May 6th. That was awesome, dude. Keep it up. Go for 200 Slayer. Or, I mean, 200 million Slayer, not 200. That's a whole different ballgame.
All right. So what do you got for our pick of the week, Alex?
I have got an interactive experience, which is called Invisible World. It's a video by NFB.
I'm sorry. Oh, boy. I can't show this off because I don't have Adobe Flash.
Yeah, it's a Flash application.
You're going to need to explain it to us.
All right. Basically, it's a documentary that's set in Cambodia where a real-life guy basically witnessed a young child drown and come back to life. And he basically made a documentary about that, and he kind of bridged it off of Cambodia's problems with how the war affected it and how people and stuff affected it, and It tells the story of him as well as two others, and it basically intertwines these three people's experiences into sort of one big conclusion, which you then can choose between different points of view between these three characters. So you basically see the same happenstance three different times with three different points of view on it. And what makes this movie interactive is that at all times, you actually see three completely different screens while the movie is playing, and you can manipulate these screens by dragging them around. So basically, no matter how you see the movie, so long as you interact with these screens, you're never going to see it the same way twice. You're always going to be looking at a different part of the screen, finding something new.
And there's one audio track, I assume, right?
Yep, of course, there's one audio track through the whole thing. That would just be silly if you played a whole bunch of them. But yeah, it's like throughout the movie, you can see three different screens and you can explore them while the movie is playing. So it gives you sort of that interactivity while you're also receiving the story itself.
Now,
the reason I picked this is because I actually worked on it. I was the one who actually made it into a Flash app. You are welcome.
Oh, wow. Okay. Wow,
and the second reason that I picked this is because it actually won a Webby. Yeah, no big deal.
No big deal, you know.
Oh, very
so,
nice.
Yeah, this was an application that I helped work on, and it won an award. So,
It doesn't even work in Safari. I don't even know what I'd use to open this then on a Mac.
Does Google Chrome still have the Pepper Flash?
No, apparently not.
Mine does. Mine plays.
Maybe I turned it off.
Probably.
Anyways. Yeah, I don't like Flash. I turn it off. But anyways, yeah, that sounds really good. And I think I think in some ways that's kind of the future of media is something that's interactive that you can have your own version of, right?
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah, that sounds really interesting, like really cool, and man, the possibilities, like the different perspectives like that. Oh man. That's good stuff, Alex.
Thank you. I also made a VR version of it that you can use with the Vive and the Oculus Rift.
Oh, no, that would be something to see as well.
Which is basically the same experience, except you're basically standing in basically theater-sized screens, and when you open it up, it actually creates a sort of doorway into the third screen.
And then do you change the screen by moving around, or?
Yep, you can walk into it, and it'll part ways to let you in, or you can just use the remotes to kind of slide the screens open yourself.
Oh, wow, that's just like... That's just straight out of Star Trek stuff right there. Wow.
Yep,
that is cool.
VR is awesome.
Very nice. Very nice.
So yeah, that's my pick of the week. I hope it wasn't too egotistical. I just thought...
Oh, no, that's great.
No. That's good stuff, man.
Like, the last thing I want to do is promote myself on the show.
Oh, that's what the entire show is for people to come on. That's what I say
that's
to
promotion?
People who
all right.
want to
I will make
join
that a mental
show.
Note. Next time it's going to be all about me and all my achievements. Got
there
it.
You go. All right, so in that regard, what have you been up to, Alex, RS-wise?
RuneScape-wise, I've just been playing the game as usual. I actually haven't been on that much lately because I've been doing other things, most of which improving my awesome drawing skills.
All right. That's fine.
But there's stuff like Kung Fu. I'm preparing for another trip to Hong Kong in October.
But of course, you did do the quest.
Oh, of course I did the quest.
Oh, good. All right.
You got to do the quest. I mean, if I'm a quester, I got to do the quest.
Yeah.
Did it last night. It was fun.
Nice. How about you, Tanis?
I've been stealing stuff. A lot. And from different people. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that and I did a quest. So, but that's literally it. Yeah.
Which quest did you do?
You're it.
Okay, I'll stop.
Yeah.
Oh, that one.
All right. Well, as for me this week, did the quest in addition to that, just a couple of clue scrolls along the way, not much to report on with that, and just divination GP gathering still. That's my fallback. I don't know. That's just what I'm doing because it'll help me train Herblore later on down the road. So if you have a good GP stack, why not, right?
That's all right.
Anyways, that is it for this week's episode of RSBNB Update. Thank you for being here, everyone, and we'll be back next week with another episode. Thank you, Alex, for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
And yeah, thanks, Alex.
And if you guys want to...
I can do way better jokes than this.
And if you guys want to join us in-game, that's at Friends Chat Bits Bytes. And we'll see you all there. So with that being said, we'll see you next week, everyone, for another episode of Ars Moenbi Update.
Yep. Take care.